For November the 3rd, 2023, we talk about Alan Wake 2, Decarnation, The Finals, and much more. Welcome to Level 478. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Jala Prendez.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Happy Halloween. And hello, Jala. Welcome back.
Hi, I'm back.
You scared me.
I went to Renfest for Pirate Weekend. It was okay. Fun. Mm. And I was dressed as a pirate. Yeah.
What kind of pirate themed activities and displays did they have?
Well, they have a whole bunch of pirate stuff at Fest, but I don't even know like where to begin because they have actors roaming around. They have a whole bunch of pirate themed shows and stuff.
They have one guy with actual scurvy.
probably so. So yeah, but like I'm sharing
the power
some photos.
Move. Would have been to go as a ninja.
Right.
Oh, geez.
Well, yeah, there are people who go to Renfest dressed as whatever, Doctor Who. It's fine. Yeah. Who cares? Yeah. So
I see the Trekkies in disguise. I like.
Yeah, yeah. So I did share in the backstage photos of my costume, which are also on all my social media, so people can see those if you like.
Good costumes.
It sounds like we've reached the point in time where we're equally likely to dress up for Ren Faire as we are Halloween.
Right.
Well, yeah, Ren Faire for me is kind of replaced Halloween because for us here, it's Renfest is all of October and November. So it's basically a bunch of the holiday season. So, yeah. You know, like then we actually got free tickets to go twice for this year. And so we already went to Pirate Weekend in October. And now the next time that we go is going to be the Friday after Thanksgiving, and that's going to be for the Celtic Christmas. So we'll be getting a lot of holidays in there. So
yeah, as nerdy as my ass is, I've never been to a Ren Faire.
Not even a school field trip.
Nope. The closest thing I've been to is there is a state park near where I grew up, where I live now, called Malabar Farm. It was like an early experiment in doing like sustainable farming kind of stuff by Louis Bromfield, like back in the 1800s or whatever. But they have like a Pioneer Days kind of thing, which, you know, now I know is fraught. But, you know, you go there and you see people dressed up like colonists and then, you know, people doing and demonstrating like indigenous crafts, like that kind of thing.
Candles, I assume.
Oh, yeah. So many wicks being dipped. It's crazy. Yeah, but that's the closest thing I've ever had. Well, it sounds like everybody else here has at least been to one.
Yeah. Well, I will say, too, that, like, Jellicon 1, because there is going to be, like, a mini convention of various people who listen to my show for NASA, actually, and we're going to be doing a Spartan race in March of next year. Nice. But Jellicon 2... for 2025, I am hoping to have at Renaissance Festival here because it is so big. It's like the size of a theme park, the one, and the grounds are there permanently all year round. So like it's a real big to do, and they have stuff going on like all year round. But basically, yeah, that'll be a thing. So fingers crossed that'll be 2025. But
cool. Yeah. Anything else?
Yes, one small thing I have to report in about a Dave-ism. So I asked Dave, hey, Dave, what's for dinner tonight? And Dave forgot how to tell me that we were eating slices of roast. So he called them meat flats. That is all.
Yeah.
Meat to flats. Be fair, slices of roast sounds like a very high concept indie album.
Meat flats,
Well, you know, we are vegan, so like these are roasts that we have made ourselves that are 100% made from scratch from home. Like we made the broth that went into them, we made the roasts themselves, we made all the other stuff to make the recipes with the roasts. So like the whole shebang. And nice. It's lemongrass and ginger roast. And so it's kind of like a pork taste to it. Mm-hmm. But anyway, yeah. So
is this an elaborate steamed hams bit? Because I will leave.
That would come from Cole.
Yeah, that would be for me.
I don't even know what that is. I don't even know why you bought it.
If it's Simpsons, it's coming from this direction.
Right, so, right. Yeah. So,
fair.
Oh, gosh.
So anyway, meat flats. That's all.
Sounds a little untoward, if I'm being honest. let's see here. Dennis, how about you? What's going on?
I'm doing great. I'm coming hot off the heels of our most adventurous Halloween yet. So
adventurous in what way?
Adventurous as in at the like dead on of 6 o'clock, it just started blizzarding here.
Oh shit.
Ooh. Like no hold bars, whipping wind, heavy snow, ridiculousness. It went on for probably like, 5 to 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Just brutal out. And then it was bitterly cold and, just frosty the entire way through. So, whoever ordered the weather for Halloween can suck it. That was terrible.
Good.
However, it was still a good time, and the kids were dissuaded not at all.
Yeah. Of course, there's candy out there.
Of course. Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, if anything, it keeps the weaker kids out of their way.
Yeah, and they were literally sprinting house to house, and I think part of that was from excitement, and part of it was for warmth.
Uh-huh.
But it all kind of contributed towards the same goal. We hit a couple big milestones this year, though. Luke is officially too cool for us.
Oh no!
And ditched us to go trick or treating with his friends.
Okay.
It's
bittersweet, right?
Yeah, I learned what frozen tears on my face feel like as I went around. The funny thing was he came back to the house and knocked on the door. He's like, "Hey, I'm back. I want to go to the Squeezy Drink House real quick because I missed it." And down one cul-de-sac, there's a house that always gives out like the giant Kool-Aid squeezers.
Okay.
Instead of candy, which, not better, but certainly stands out in the kids' minds.
Right, right. It was probably a slushy by the time he got home.
Well, no, it was the gift that kept on giving. So we're like, yeah, go, you can run. So he goes down, and then it's taken him 2-3 times longer than it should. And we're like, are we going to have to go like Amber Alert tonight? What's right. going on? And then he waltzes back in. Grinning like a Cheshire cat. He's like, "Oh yeah, I got the squeezies." And then on the way back, all the houses were closing down, so they just unloaded their candy on me. He used it as a jumping off point for a last minute end around to like double his supply of candy.
That is, hopefully he's sharing.
It all goes into one giant bag, but that bag is bursting at the seams. Like, I'm not joking. The seams are literally coming apart. That's enterprising. It was a good night. Yes.
He has provided well for the clan.
Yes. I take a daddy tax on all of it. And so I can't say I was mad that he brought home more good stuff.
Yeah.
For a cold night, it was a good haul. For anyone curious, we went as Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Okay.
The four older members of the family, and then the youngest, Barrett, went as a slice of pizza.
Aw.
Yeah.
I'll pull down some photos to share. But it was a good night.
That's great.
It's good to know that Luke would survive Pioneer Day.
Yeah. He was prepared well for the coming winter. Yeah. Well, that's cool. Ben, what did your kids dress up as?
The Invisible Man and Woman, I guess. This is the first year I'm just not doing anything at all for Halloween. I even have like friends in town after the podcast I'm going out, but it's not Halloween related at all. I just have friends in town from Cincinnati. So
Where can you go out tonight that is not Halloween related?
That's the thing is like the neighborhood, there's not really like kids here. So I think restaurants are still open and everything, like,
right.
Shrug. It's like the people who work there are dressed in costumes, and that's about as like festive as it gets.
The self-loathing that is exuding from them makes up for it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure. I probably varying degrees of force the situation. Yeah. But
You haven't lived until you've talked with a bank teller that very clearly did not have a choice whether or not to wear the silly costume.
Oof. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. I just challenge the premise of the slice of pizza that brings me my burger. I call them muddled and flawed. Mm. Yeah. Well, I mean, let's keep the show short so you can go and hang with your friends.
Sure.
I mean, yeah.
Man, that didn't hurt until just now.
No pressure. No. There's nothing.
Yeah, go hang with your real friends, Ben.
No.
I did not mean that with any of them at all. It's
podcast comes first, y'all.
That's why it hurts even more.
You talk with us every week.
My baby grew up. I read the baby.
This is just aftershocks of Luke leaving. Never mind. I don't feel bad anymore.
I'm crashing from my sugar high.
Why is Dennis of all of us doing that? Like, I talk to you guys less. Shut up, Dennis. Anyway.
Fair enough.
He's in a raw place.
This is the podcast sugar. It's
he's
just breaking down
right now. Yeah, he's very vulnerable.
I'm just now realizing we're talking like it's Halloween when this episode comes out. It's Halloween when we're recording this. So this is
literally the day of.
Yes, it is Halloween. And
so when this comes out, people are super over Halloween at that point. So
yes. Well, we're bringing them right back in. Yeah.
Oh, there was violence. One last Halloween thing. There was violence on our block. Two teenagers walking down the middle of the fucking road playing Christmas music.
Oh no! Come on.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I thought about dressing up as Santa and going to a Halloween thing and seeing how long it took for someone to take a swing at me.
My favorite costume suggestion ever is dressing up as Doc Brown and Marty McFly and going door to door on the 30th. And then when people are like, not Halloween, dude, go, great Scott, we overshot.
Dress up as Slowpoke, but he's carrying an American flag and sparklers and stuff.
Yes, I love it. My favorite ever.
Oh, this is good.
That's a free one for next year. I don't have a whole lot happening. It's Halloween wise. I thought I was going to a thing, ended up falling through. It's fine. I want to direct people who are listening for about eight. I think this is the eighth year I've done it. It's a yearly tradition where for patrons, I put up a Halloween short story reading. And this year, I did Franz Kafka's In the Penal Colony, which is about an execution and torture device that takes 12 hours to kill a dude. The first one of these I've done that's been over an hour since I first started doing these in 2016. Oh, yeah.
How long is the text itself?
I think it was like 30 pages, something like that. Yeah.
That's you.
Yep. So there are a bunch of those now. Like if you are listening and you're like, hey, just I want to listen to something spooky. I don't care if it's not Halloween. Those are there. So that's promotion, but also it is something that I enjoy doing every year because I get to do like sound design and stuff for it too.
Mm-hmm. And everybody loves them.
People enjoy them.
People have been talking to me about it for the last month straight. Oh, that means it's almost Halloween. That means that we're going to get a reading from Cole.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I managed to get it out early this time, just to get it out for the weekend. So go check it out. But really, nothing else going on. I think we should talk about video games. And to do that, we need to do the regular kind of show. What with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with
the grind?
The grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Jala, you've been away the longest, so I will throw it to you.
Yay! So the reason why it's been a long time since I've been on the show is because I haven't had any time to play video games since the last time I was on, until like I finally did eke out a little bit of time to finish a couple of things that I talked about. So, I don't know, was it the end of August? I don't even know how long ago it was. So long ago.
It was like September, I think.
Was it? Okay.
I mean, and this is the appropriate time for you to eke anything, so
Yeah, yeah. So
eek, the sound person makes when they're scared.
Yes.
Ghosts.
Yes.
I can continue. So, yeah. I can make this more painful if you want.
I know you can.
Okay. Anyway, continue. You've had time to play games.
So I finished Pocket Mirror Goldener Traum, which is the RPG Maker pixel horror game that was done like Japanese style, has some nice little animated cutscene things. Had originally I had picked it up because I played the demo, and the demo's got like a fair little chunk of it. And when I was playing it, I was like, oh, this kind of feels sort of Corpse Party-ish to me. It's not. It's not okay. A Corpse Party at all, but it is very cool. It's one of those games where you have no idea what's going on until the very end. And okay. Honestly, with the ending that I got, I still had to go to YouTube to see the other endings because I didn't have enough time to go through it a bunch of times to mm-hmm. play through it. To see all the different endings and see all the little story bits, because depending upon what you do at a bunch of different branching points, each segment, which focuses on individual characters that you come across and, you know, are encountering in their own little realms, different things will happen, and those mm-hmm. things will pan out differently. And then how all of those accumulate over time equals different endings. And there's, I don't remember how many endings, 4 or 5, something like that, maybe more. Mm-hmm. So I just don't have the time to do that. As it is, it's hard for me to get the time in. So
doing the wiki dive.
Yeah. So I just went to YouTube and I looked at and understanding, you know, like a Pocket Mirror Explained, Understanding the Game by Patriot Jax on YouTube. I will give that mm-hmm. a shout out. It's a really neat, if you have no interest in playing this game, definitely check that out, because the actual story, the way that, you know, it is explained in there, I'm like, oh, wow, I had no idea that that was what was going on. And that's really neat. And now I really want to go back and replay it, knowing mm-hmm. all of the stuff that I know. Again, I don't want to spoil it, but it is really wild and very cool. And yeah, I definitely would want to replay that game. Had I the time to appreciate it fully with all the knowledge that I am equipped with at this juncture.
When you say with certainty that this is not Corpse Party, this ain't no Corpse Party implies that it's worse. Like, what is using that as the common point of reference here? Like, how does it differ?
So I'm not implying that it's worse. It's just mm-hmm. not. It doesn't have the same flavor as a Corpse Party. Mm-hmm. This one is kind of more of an Alice in Wonderland type of feeling to it. But like if it were like really dark and your character is amnesiac, doesn't know what her name is, doesn't know who she is and what her purpose is, but feels driven to find out certain information and feels driven to understand each of these different people that she comes across during the course of this game. And so each of the different areas, I think there's 5 or 6 sections. Mm-hmm. Each one of them has a different main character that you encounter and, you know, interact with during that portion, and you learn about them, and everybody's like, basically every single one of the characters that you come across can either have a good end or a bad end, or you can have a dead end and die. Mm-hmm. So in each of the bad ends, at least from the ones that I saw, all of the characters who seem like they're very nice and sweet can be in fact rather controlling and take you over, and you kind of basically turn into more or less a doll at their disposal. Very creepy stuff. But it's also, everybody's very cute, very pretty. Mm-hmm. There's lots of stuffed animals and people sitting down to have tea and that kind of thing. But then it's also just real creepy stuff. Yeah. So it's interesting. It's cool. It has a unique flavor to it. I definitely recommend that people check out the demo if you are interested in playing. And if you aren't, again, look up the YouTube and look at, you know, just the first, I don't know, 20-ish minutes of that explanation video. It's mm-hmm. neat. Like if the first 20-ish minutes doesn't turn you on to the idea of this game, then you just set it aside. But it's very cool. So
are you going to play their follow-up? The little goody two shoes is what it's called.
That one is actually a prequel to Pocket Mirror, and it basically talks about. I can't.
Oh yeah,
explain who that character is. But anyway, that character is related to the stuff that goes on in Pocket Mirror, and it's actually a prequel. I would like to play it at some juncture. It's not like up on my list right at this particular moment because 2023 is a game of a lot, or a year of a lot of really good games.
I have so
many games on my backlog, and so many more games that people keep on screaming at me that I need to play. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know. I'll go get to it sometime. I don't know.
Yeah.
So anyway, does anybody have any questions about Pocket Mirror that I can answer, maybe?
I mean, the things that I would ask are spoilers because it is so narrative heavy. Is there anything in the way of like puzzle solving? Like, are you doing like light adventure stuff, or is
there, there's puzzles in every one of the different sections. Some of them are like straight up puzzles related to like physical stuff that you are, you know, messing with. Some of them are riddles. Some of them are like, unfortunately, like chase scenes with memorization involved in it, or just dumb luck. The restart points for everything are pretty close. So like, it's not like a, even though some parts are kind of unfair in that way, like you have to memorize it to get it right. You know,
That sounds very much like Corpse Party.
it's in that style, but at the same time, like just the tone of the narrative and the way that the bad ends are described and everything are very, very different.
Yeah.
So, like the feel of the narrative is different, even though there are very many similarities, which is why I was like, oh, this is like a Corpse Party when I first started playing, because I was looking at the way the puzzles were playing out and everything, because I didn't know the story when I was doing the demo. But anyway, like the restart points are not very far back or anything. Most of the time it'll like restart you right before the thing, you know, so you can just go back and you know, play through that part again without having too much friction. Mm-hmm. So
nice.
So yeah, it's a little bit of memorization, a little bit of riddles, a little bit of actual puzzles.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, finding objects, you know, stuff like that. Adventure gamey stuff.
So, yeah.
The next one that I did was Decarnation, which, again, I played that before. I talked about it a little bit. I already gave you the rundown of what that is, but I actually went through and finished it. And, this is also a really good pixel horror game, although this one is from a French team. So this one is really a big roller coaster of feelings, and the narrative focuses on both direct directly on problems of being a woman, but also issues of being a woman that are like inclusive of things like beauty standards, beauty as a totem, parental and societal expectations, but it also veers off into abstracted presentation of like and direct presentation of domestic abuse, psychological manipulation with a theme of accepting dark parts of yourself. Like there's a lot that goes on, and it's not pulling any punches about how this experience is.
Yeah.
And somehow, despite the dark subject matter, the heavy subject matter, it ends on a positive note. Which I wasn't expecting, because this is like a horror game. But I mean, like it ends on a positive note, like an uplifting note at the end. So yeah, it's really good. The visuals, the music, and the visuals and the music in Pocket Mirror are also outstanding. I should say that the visuals and the music and everything in this game are also very good. Doing a lot of work in Decarnation, I feel like there's a lot more specialized animation going on, because they are trying to work with very specific movie directing styles and stuff, like Satoshi Kon and David Lynch, and you know, like there's some elements that are like Suspiria. So I mean, like there's a lot of stuff they're drawing from that requires the extra animation and stuff. So
I mean, visually, this game, like, if the idea of pixel horror is kind of like, I can't really like get involved or feel, you know, feel scared by that, this, I think, will do a very good job of making that sale for you, just because of how visually lush it is, not just showing cool fucked up body horror, but also like real cool surreal imagery I'm seeing here, just from having like poked around at this. And also just animation specifically, like pixel animation is very hard to do, you know, imagine pixel art, but then also applying, you know, animation principles to it. Difficult. They seem to have struck this pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, so the narrative, I already said before, like a lot of it has to do with, you know, it trades in the sensation of being a woman, the situations that you encounter as a woman. And I feel like it's also presented in such a way that you can universally identify with it at the same time, because the main character, Gloria, is very so a character that you can very much empathize with, different touches of what she's going through and what she's saying to herself in the writing are things that I feel like come across really well to anybody. Anybody can identify with some of these thoughts at some point or another, or their own version of what's going on there. And a lot of what's kind of cool about this game is a lot of times you don't know whether you're in a dream or if you're in reality or if you're somewhere else. You have no idea, actually, for chunks of the game, like where you really are. Is this space inside of Gloria's head? Is this she's sleeping? Is this something else? Is this real? You don't know. You don't know for a long time until you sort that out. But anyway, I absolutely have to talk about this one in depth somewhere. So I'm going to have to locate somewhere to chat it out on a podcast, because it really bears a replay and then like a deeper discussion of it. Pocket Mirror is also very good and has a lot of interesting stuff to it, but Decarnation has more going on throughout. Whereas like with Pocket Mirror, it's kind of sprinkled, but like, you know, it's all mostly at the end. So Decarnation kind of spreads it out a little bit more evenly, where you can kind of talk play by play, even though it is a narrative game, you can talk play by play each of the different acts of this game.
Yeah.
And what's like, you know, the playtime of the game?
I want to say it's about an hour per act. There's six acts total. It's a little bit under an hour. I think I finished in about 5.5 hours or so.
Okay. Yeah.
So, but yeah, my only complaint about the game is that there is a plethora of different forms of gamification. And when I say that, I mean, like, there's a bunch of different sections. And I talked about this before. The last time I was on, I talked about how they gamified things that I didn't feel like needed to be gamified. But as the story went on, that became more significant, to the point where I felt like some of those forms of gamification, even if they feel arbitrary and don't, you know, don't really feel like they serve a whole lot of purpose, they are actually necessary, because it makes you feel involved in the story. And without that, you aren't as invested as you would be if you were just passively observing. And the fact that you have to make Gloria do some of the things that Gloria does is important.
Right.
As an act. You know, you're not just bearing witness to this. You're taking part in this.
Yeah. So, kind of seems if it's playing with those themes, then involving some kind of agency would be important.
Right. Right. Yeah. So as much as like I still don't like some of the different forms of gamification, like, say, for example, there's rhythm game aspects that later on end up becoming part of a boss battle. And you're like, okay, like, you know, you didn't get a whole lot of time learning how to do that. And then you learned seven other types of gamification before the rhythm game stuff became important. So, you're still able to muddle through it and everything, but like, it's still, makes it a little bit more difficult, because you don't have enough time sitting with any one of the gamification modes, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, any questions about Decarnation?
No, you're making me very interested in this.
You need to play it, Cole. You would like
yeah,
it.
Yeah, probably do. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So last thing I have on the list here is Sorry We're Closed, the demo. So this is a retro-inspired single-player survival horror game that looks like a PS1 title with fixed camera angles and Quake-like first-person combat. And this game comes out in 2024. I don't know when, sometime, from Alamode Games and Akupara Games. So the Steam page says that it will have rich lore, deep characters, and multiple endings. And notice all of the stuff I played this time, it's all horror games, all of them today. Yeah. So
it's appropriate.
It makes sense.
Yay! Anyway, you follow the final days of the female protagonist's life as a demon comes a knocking, looking for love in all the wrong places, and it puts a looming slow death curse on you that also grants you a third eye with which you can see the true forms of angels and demons, as well as a dark realm version of your London borough. So, mm-hmm. like, you're walking around your apartment complex, you open your third eye, suddenly you see that it looks very much like you just, you know, flip the switch in Silent Hill, you know?
Yeah.
And all of that mess. So, your first weapon is a hatchet, but you swiftly also acquire the Hellhound, which is a demonic pistol. And also in the demo, you end up acquiring a shotgun as well. So you get three weapons in the demo. The demo is about an hour. Your third eye also, I wanted to mention this, has a purpose in combat as well. So not only is it like your switch to see what's going on in the, you know, world you are aware of versus the dark realm or whatever, but also when you open your third eye, you can see enemies' weak points, which you can then attack in order to get criticals. But when your eye is open, you can only hit those weak points, and enemies have to be within your cone of vision, which is a very short range right around your character.
Yeah.
So you also can't shoot bullets through the range of your third eye to hit other enemies that are outside of that range. So mm-hmm. like if you've got enemies up close and you open up your third eye so you can hit their critical points, you also, like if you kill them, you have to close your third eye before you can hit the ones that are further away. Otherwise, your bullets disintegrate.
I'm getting
your third
huge.
Eye is nearsighted.
Yes.
I'm getting huge Killer 7 vibes off of this, specifically from that, you know, reveal the weak points in a field around you kind of mechanic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's fun. It's cool. It's creepy. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to the release of the full game. And mm-hmm. Cole, definitely play the demo.
Yeah. No, but
sorry
like,
to keep on giving
this.
You assignments, but like these are things no. that you will probably enjoy.
People don't think I have a list, but I have a list. Just for clarification, like I can glean this from looking at the GIFs on the on their store page, but I just want you to explain for people who are not looking at that right now. Two of the things you said are in direct contradiction to each other, which is fixed camera angles and Quake-like combat.
Yeah, so
like how does that work out?
The fixed camera angles are basically when you are just walking around the world, you actually have to hit a button to switch into your combat mode, at which okay. point you are turned into a turret and mm-hmm. you have to sit in place to attack stuff. Mm-hmm. You also, I believe you can shoot stuff when you're in your overhead mode, but you cannot hit stuff with the hatchet unless you're in your first person mode, something like that. So,
okay.
But you can also shoot your gun from first person mode as well.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So. That'd be weird if you couldn't.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, this looks really cool. It's got a very distinct visual style to it. Yeah, I'm just curious because horror games, you know, one of their purposes is to show you a bunch of cool, surreal shit. And I'm seeing some like good, like almost like Catherine like stuff in here. They're mixing up a bunch of influences that I can get down with.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Like, even just in the first, I don't know, 5 minutes of the game, when your character goes back to her apartment and you're just in the apartment and then you go to sleep, like, some weird shit happens. And when you mm-hmm. see the stuff, it's like, oh, that's really weird and creepy. Like, it's not necessarily, like, ooh, so scary, but, like, it is unsettling. And, like, the demon yeah. is real creepy guy. So... Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I saw people tweeting about this or, you know, saw people posting about it and just by name, Sorry We're Closed. And I was like, oh, wait, Sorry We're Open got a sequel? That that supermarket horror RPG thing that I was playing? Mm-hmm. No, this is unrelated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know yet, by the way, from the demo, why it's called Sorry We're Closed. I have not figured that out yet. I do not know from the demo.
So. I'll figure it out.
Yes.
Sorry, that answer is closed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Nice. No, I mean, all of these sound cool in their own ways.
Yep, they are. They're all very neat.
I don't know that I have any questions about it.
Cool.
Yeah.
Next.
I would like to go second.
Yes, Ben, go.
Because I have two games and they both have two in it. So the first one, I've continued playing Spider-Man 2 from last week. There's not a whole lot to update. The point that I'm at now in the game is like the point of where they showed in the E3 demo from like a year ago, where it's like the mission where you're on boats and stuff. Mm-hmm. And Spider-Man has the black spider suit on. So I won't reveal much of what's not shown in that, I guess.
I think we can gather what's happening with the black spiders.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. It's somewhat predictable that, you know, what's happening with that arc, I guess. But I won't spoil any of the specifics or whatever so that people can enjoy that if they want to go through themselves. Mm-hmm. But it's still a fun game. There isn't really much friction on it. There's a whole bunch of like mini games that they have like added throughout the game that's similar to the first Spider-Man, that are just like kind of fun side things that are just integrated in the world. The open world stuff's still interesting. It doesn't feel as like to-do listy. Like it's, you know, like you just can stop by and do like a random mission or whatever if you're in the area, and doesn't feel like a chore or anything like that. The story is still interesting.
Is there anything like the like Doc Ock lab puzzles that you got real sidetracked on in the first one?
There's nothing that's as like maybe addictive as that one, but there are some that are like kind of close. There's like this weird like molecular puzzle type game where you have to try and like blow up bad things and keep the good things or whatever, and by destroying this like molecule looking thing. So there's like a few things that come close, but nothing that's kind of reached that yet. The narrative's still interesting. It's still like, it still feels like I'm maybe like at the halfway point, like, and there's still like a lot of story left. It's not even entirely clear like what the motivation of the main bad guy is, or even if that will be the main bad guy till the end of the game or not. And because it's like Black Suit Spider-Man, I'm sure there's like a Venom probably at the end of the game, maybe, but I don't know who would be the person and how that would be executed, you know? So there's still like, it seems like there's still a lot of meat on the bone. So that is still enjoyable. However, I don't have anything else to say about that unless anyone has any questions, but I stopped playing that so I could play the other game that I got, which is Alan Wake 2.
Oh, okay. I'm just about to Spider-Man 2.
Sure.
I have heard complaints about the Mary Jane stealth missions, which were a real bummer in the first one. How are those hitting you?
So see, I hadn't seen any of that. In fact, I had seen the opposite, where it's like they had improved it. And there's only been one, I think, main mission like that. And it was not like, it was fine. It wasn't.
Okay.
And fine normally, and then for stealth missions it was great. So it's like, because it wasn't like a black mark on the game. And that's, you know, like, and stealth missions in general in games are usually pretty painful, I guess. But with this one, it's good because they give you enough buffer that you're not like restarting all the time. So basically, the game conceit of it is you can just like, it's kind of like Hotline Miami, where it's like you just need to run in and stun someone really quick. But they might get a few shots off of some weapon that I won't describe the details of in case it's a spoiler. But it's like, if you get hit two or three times, you might have to restart, but you have this like buffer room. And so you can kind of slow down and wait for that to kind of wear off before you can go and fight people again. So I think the main saving grace of the game is that I didn't have to restart once, like playing the entire stealth mission. So I think that makes it very, very good. So, for a stealth mission. Nice. I don't think it's that bad. So I'd be curious to hear like the people who disliked it, like what their complaints were about it. And then similarly, the parts where you're like Spider-Man and you can optionally do like stealth stuff, there's one feature in particular that seems kind of OP, where it's like, You can they introduced this mechanic in the game where it's like a web, it's like a web zip line that you can create. And I'm not sure if they had this in the first one or not, where it's like, but it's, you can create as many as you want, as long as you're connecting it to something that's like at about the same height as you.
It's kind of pulling directly from the line launcher from the Arkham games.
Yeah. It's similar. It's very similar to that. One feature that you can unlock through like your upgrading is you can incapacitate two people if you're in stealth mode with it. And they kind of have this cool feature where it'll show you if the person is like safe to stealth or not, based on if other people can see them or not, which is like a nice quality of life thing. And I know at that point it's kind of making it like very easy and like there's not really any like, you don't have to do any other deep level thinking or anything. It's like, oh, this is green color, I'm going to press triangle now. Like that sort of thing. Yeah. But you know, it's like, you can still like, all you're doing is you're like, you can try and distract people in certain directions to either isolate them so you can take them out, or isolate someone who's looking at multiple people so that you can take the multiple people out. But I don't know. It's a nice quality of life if you want to do that, but it's just as feasible just go in guns blazing or webs blazing or whatever and take people out that way. One thing that's kind of goofy about the game is like the OP fighting strategy is just to jump off of a building if you're fighting on a rooftop and then just pull people to you one at a time so that they just drop to their death. And it's like, that's a way that you can get through fighting like pretty quickly. That's pretty nice. But
that's weirdly almost the exact same strategy I had for fighting guards in Assassin's Creed.
Okay.
Which was not like jumping and yanking people off, but literally just like, hey, gravity could work for this. And then just pushing them.
Yeah. Wait, you were yanking people off in Assassin's Creed 3?
I mean, with mods, you can accomplish anything.
You do want to desynchronize, all right?
So. And there's no shame in that.
Yeah, it's all in the past, Dennis. And then the other thing is, I think they acknowledge the fact that it's a lot easier to do fighting in the air and just pulling people up and punching them there. Because one thing they introduced is that guards will throw like an air grenade that's like a grid of like electricity so that it'll hurt you if you go through it to try and keep you on the ground and fighting. So they do that at certain points. So I think, which is a good design or whatever, to try and nerf that sort of strategy, but still works though if you're on a rooftop. That's, thugs are in trouble in that case, but, anyway, but yeah, no, it's still a good game. I still enjoy it a bunch, despite it being a sequel and despite it not being, you know, vastly different from the first game. It is still like an enjoyable ride to me. So, so your mileage may vary based on how you like the first game or how different of an experience you want. So,
yeah, I want to hear your thoughts on Alan Wake 2.
Yeah, and we can kind of compare notes maybe. I purposely did not watch the stream Friday night because I didn't want anything spoiled because I hadn't started it yet. But how far did you get?
I got through like the first two chapters. Is what I got. I'm still playing. I have still only played as what's her name, Saga.
Yeah,
yeah.
Which is a fun literary name.
Yeah, yeah. Alan Wake is not known for being especially subtle. Yeah, I've got a lot of thoughts on what's going on with or what it's going to throw at me. Even just based on the very obvious references that it's making.
So you might be a little bit ahead of me. I'm in the second chapter and I'm at the first boss battle.
Okay. I don't know that I have. Man, it's hard.
It's hard to talk. Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard without. the guy that we did the autopsy on had fled to the lake and I was back at the woods looking for clues about him. Yes.
Okay. So we're at similar spots then. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Basics wise, this is Alan Wake, but 13 years later. The FBI is onto some clues about missing persons cases, people who went missing back in 2010, around the time of the original Alan Wake, are starting to show up dead around the town of Bright Falls, where I believe it's Bright Falls, around the town where Alan Wake 1 takes place, and you as an FBI agent go out to investigate. That is what I know so far, but that's kind of the setup or the remit.
The thing that I like about it so far, and I'll try and avoid like any plot point spoilers or you know, but like kind of speaking generalities about it, the game feels very much kind of like the X-Files from the 90s, where it's like A in the Pacific Northwest, and then B, like a major component of the game is you're trying to investigate and you're trying to like solve these murders. And so the gameplay conceit they have around that is you're collecting clues and you're literally making like a board, we're tying ribbons and like strings attaching to photos and stuff like that to try and solve the case. And they gamify it by it's like, they'll start with a question you need to answer and you might need, you know, X clues in order to answer the question.
This is similar, just to draw a comparison point for people. This is very similar to some of the like Mind Palace techniques from Frogwares. Mystery adventure games. So like the Sinking City or the Sherlock Holmes games that they have made. It feels very similar to that, where you're collecting evidence and then trying to put it into context.
Yeah. And the game mechanic isn't entirely deep. Like, it's not like it's asking you to do this tremendous amount of like deductive reasoning or anything like that. Cause you can literally just trial and error it. And it's like, just cycle through a clue and literally put it at every option that it could go, and it'll eventually go somewhere. So it's not that it's like this huge, like puzzle game. I think it's there more for like thematic reasons to make you feel like you're an actual detective sort of thing.
Yeah.
But the other thing that's kind of like stand out is it's like they hit you with the supernatural stuff like pretty quickly in this game. And that's like another thing that kind of harkens back to like an X-Files vibe for me, where it feels like a Monster of the Week situation kind of. And the thing that's interesting is your character just like rolls with it, like has no like reservation about like any of this stuff being weird. It's like, okay, yeah, let's just figure out like what this is like now. So I think that is all cool. One thing that's kind of weird is like how they do the Easter egg type system, where they kind of give you freedom to like run around the maps that you have. And they give you somewhat big maps, and it seems like they're giving you a way so that you can kind of travel between them. So I'm guessing that there might be like open world points later in the game, perhaps. But there's quote unquote like Easter eggs where like in the corners of these maps there might be these like lunch pails that you can go through, and it just says like writing scraps as a resource you can get out of it, and you can use those to upgrade your weapon. In the main menu, the main menu is also like a one of the kind of like dominant features of the game. That's a really interesting implementation. I think it's okay if revealing what it is. I don't think it's a huge spoiler.
I use Mind Palace. Here they call it a mind place. Instead of going into like a pause menu or something like that, it always keeps like a map loaded when you press the button. It is Saga in a cabin room where it changes based on the things that you're finding. So like the menu is a physical space, but this is important to me. It can also just be a menu. You don't have to like walk around physically to do basic things.
Yeah, you can toggle between the spots in the room that are, to me, it kind of reminded me of the Stephen King, Dream Catchers, isn't that?
It's a Dream Catcher, yeah.
Yeah, the one character there who's like, has a literal place for his mind that's like a library where he keeps like all these books and stuff like that.
Yeah, also, you're thinking of Dr. Sleep, is what that is.
No, I think it's
it's Dreamcatcher too.
They might be in both. I know in Dreamcatcher there's like, because there's like a action scene where like the worm with teeth is like chasing the guy through the library or whatever.
That is Dreamcatcher, sorry.
So perhaps King used it in multiple places though, because but the fact is like it feels like that sort of reference, so it's like reinforcing that sort of vibe.
It's right in it's right in line.
Yeah. And then like a lot of like Twin Peaksy themes with like you go to a literal diner in the opening, you know, mission or two.
Yeah. Alan Wake 1 was extremely Twin Peaksy. This is extremely Twin Peaks The Return, like almost actionably so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so it seems to be all the charm of a Remedy game. It seems like they nail it, like the theming, like similar to how like Control was just like a very bespoke theme, and it was in the, you know, character seemed right on, and it's like had its own style that was very definitive. This game has all that. It isn't maybe as distinct as Control is, since it's a sequel and it's kind of in the same vibe and same theming as the first game.
I mean, this has been established in Control DLC, and also like very quickly you see stuff about the FBC. This is in the same universe as Control. Like it's Remedy has kind of built themselves a multiverse kind of thing.
Yeah. The thing I like about this, though, well, even though they do this sometimes, is like sometimes they'll put the title card huge font up in front, like they do this with the opening title or whatever, just like in Control. But I like it much better when it's like Chapter 2 and they do it like the X-Files style where it's just in the bottom left corner as if it's like a government document or something like that. Mm-hmm. So anyway, yeah, like it so far. That said, I'm not too deep into the combat, and where I am in the combat, there's already been a huge like upswing and like, oh, this is really difficult. And this is only like the fourth thing that I fought right now. So that's not cool.
I've not done a whole lot of combat. Like I just barely started getting into like, oh, here are the Taken in the Woods, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, people where you have to do the Alan Wake combat loop, you know, shine a light and then do that. It is hard for me to evaluate the little combat that I have done just because I don't know, it feels very much like Alan Wake. So they have not had a chance to elaborate on it. I hope they do, because Alan Wake ended up getting very repetitive.
Yes.
I'm
a little worried about that here, but we'll see. Because I'm not in a dissimilar place from where you are as well. So.
This is a complaint that I have that is only borne by being partway through. But like, if you are sitting down to play this, this game does not make an excellent case for itself in its first couple of hours. It is it's my opinion. But like from my point of view, I was kind of walking around the same map. Just in at different times of day, and at one point it was raining, kind of searching for interaction points. It is a very slow burn getting into the start outside of the opening, which is nice and cool and surreal or whatever, like the tutorial.
Good. I noticed that as well, and the map of the like woods where the first like murder scene is. I explored it like every corner of it first and found like some of the lunch pails and stuff like that. And then I was like, okay, well, let me go back to where I needed to go or whatever. And then quickly realized like, oh, I should just follow wherever they're going to tell me to go. And like, I'll eventually get to all these other places.
No, I about lost my mind when I had, you know, gone and done some exploring. Like I had gone a direction thinking that was where it wanted me to go. And I poked around or whatever. And then later it sent me to go and find a puzzle doodad. And then I got right back to the place where I reached accidentally. And then suddenly there was an interactable there for me to grab. I really should have been able to grab that fuse from that lookout.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah, I noticed the same thing. But again, like that to me, that communicated like, oh, okay, this isn't the type of game where it's like go off on your own and explore every nook and cranny.
Just
go for the ride and just like follow whatever the characters are doing in like conversations and stuff.
I don't trust that they're going to make that always be the case, because Control was very much a game where it did reward doing that kind of exploration with like whole side quest kind of things. Maybe that'll change once we're out of the once you're out of the introduction. And things are a little bit less linear. I do know for a fact that it gets more open worldy, which is an interesting prospect, but like, I don't know, going around in the same like very visually noisy forest looking for interaction points as you're doing this investigation for a whole 2 hours basically was it did not feel like a very strong case. I felt like it could have given a little bit of like play candy, you know, in its first 2 hours for like the length of a movie. But instead, if over the length of a movie, it doled out like a television episode's worth of information and story. And that didn't feel especially great to me.
They should have done the trick that Pentiment did in the opening scene where it's like, oh, there's sheep on all these paths. You have to go on this direct path to the castle. That's where we're going to make you go like immediately. They should have done that.
They also
on the
do
map.
That in Pokemon.
But, you know, it's restrict the possibility space while they're, you know, if they're going to railroad you, railroad you, like just commit to it.
So they probably should have done that in the first act on the first map. Or, yeah, because I will admit the lunch pails, like the fact that those give you like tangible bonuses does mm-hmm. kind of pull against the rest of the gameplay where it's like, hey, you should probably just follow the main path for now.
Yeah.
So anyway, we'll see how that shakes out or how they, you know, like iterate on that as going forward. But I'm into it so far. I'm interested to see where the story goes. And I'm sure that there's definitely a danger of like bouncing off of it if the combat is like atrocious, or like very frictionful, like the first one was. Yeah. But we'll see.
I also have some trust problems with this because at one point there's like a safe that's locked and it has a padlock where the combination is three symbols, and there's a note that tells you, hey, you know, roughly here are the steps to go get the combination.
Yeah.
I went and got the combination and put it in the order that it told me, and it didn't work. So I had to try all 9 possible combinations of those symbols after going and checking and making sure that I made the proper note of what symbols they were. It's just the game straight up lied to me about what to put in there.
Well, there's 2 sinks. Which one do you know, like where the what symbol was off?
I can't remember the order. I tried doing the sinks differently. It didn't work.
So let's do mild spoiler for the next minute or something, just because I want to deep dive into this. The clue is like, wash your hands, take the chicken out of the fridge, and then go to sleep. And so there's like a symbol in the bathroom sink. There's a symbol that's attached to the refrigerator, like on the side of it. Mm-hmm. And then there's one by the bed in the living room or the bedroom or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I was able to do that like correctly. The one thing that's kind of annoying is like the triangle symbol by the sink. There's 2 that are just like mirror images of one another. So the order of that one matters, but I'd be curious to see which way it was input or what the error was. Cause it is definitely reasonable for that to be like slightly off or easy to make a mistake in a couple different ways.
Oh, I triple and quadruple checked it.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll check the bonds.
We'll go there, do a forensic analysis of it.
Put some clues around my wall. Yeah.
What you're playing this on the PS5, right?
Yes, correct. Okay. Yeah.
How's it running on there for you?
It seems fine. The only issue I've had is there is one bug where I checked a clue before I talked to a person, and then like it put me in a fail state where I couldn't get out, and so I had to like reload the level. And then do things in the order that they wanted me to do them in, and then it wasn't breaking. So that was a little bit annoying, but yeah, otherwise it's been fine as far as like how it runs.
Okay. My PC could not handle playing it and streaming it at the same time. So I built a new PC.
Oh my.
Yeah.
Well, that's dramatic. Talking about this.
What's that?
I saw you mentioning this. Yeah.
It wasn't specifically for Alan Wake. It's also been choking on Baldur's Gate, and I've been having a lot of trouble playing basically games that came out this year and streaming them at the same time. So it was about time to get that fixed up. So I dealt with that. Okay. Yeah. So next, I'm trying to decide. Honestly, I don't know if I'm going to go back to it directly. I have not played the Control DLC that leads to it. So I don't know if I want to stream Control and then stream this, or just read a plot summary of what happens in that and then go forward. So still trying to. But by the time people are hearing this, I probably made up my mind. But
Okay. Well, yeah. I don't know. I'm optimistic about it still. Mm-hmm. I'm just impressed at the volume of good games that have come out in the last like 2 or 3 weeks, and
it's a good year for game releases while being a terrible year for the industry. Yeah. Exactly. Which is conflicting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Neat. I don't know that I have anything more to say about Alan Wake 2. I was not impressed by the first 2 hours, especially outside of, you know, some aesthetic stuff. But that's just the first 2 hours. This is a bigger game than that, and I'm going to give it more of a chance.
I'm curious if the like performance issues is what kind of like sullied the waters for you. Like,
that's a big caveat as well. It was to the point where the wandering felt especially bad because I when checking the map, right? Because sometimes it's hard to tell like where a path diverges, and so I'd press the button to open up the map, and it would take, I should have timed it, but it took somewhere above 10 seconds for the map, for not just for it to load. It would load the image, but it would be a low res version of it. And then it would have to load in the high, like the high res one. So like something very simple that I had to do very often, checking the map, ended up, you know, taking forever. That is not strictly the developer's fault. That feels like a like an optimization thing. Like, hey, why is switching to the map a high resource thing? But that also there's shared blame just for playing it on an older system from several years back. So
I would definitely have a problem with it if that was happening like on the console version, since that's a very targeted hardware that they're making it for.
They should have known. Well, no, it's you can test. You can test and see, like, hey, how's this play? Oh, no, we've got a 30-second map load time on the PS5. We should probably fix that.
Yeah. Did you notice, like, is there... Because I know you can do performance or presentation-based for the, like, run. Did changing any of the settings, like, change any of that for you? Or did you, like, go through all that Friday night?
Yeah, I fucked around with it. I moved things, in, incredibly low. And then also, like, you can change the render resolution versus the scaled resolution. So I was doing something ridiculous, like rendering at sub 720, but scaling to 1080, so it would be native. So the processor would have less work to do scaling it to broadcast it at 1080p.
So, Jesus.
Yeah, it was real, like, I don't know, moving money around kind of thing. Just like, I can't make the two ends of this belt meet, you guys.
Yeah.
So I will cop to performance issues making a, leading to a bad first impression, but like, I will stand by my criticism that it starts out just a little bit too slowly, which in the broad scheme of things may not be that big of a deal. But also, how many times have we said, don't make me play several hours before we get to the cool stuff?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and there's a difference between that and then building tension to cool reveals, right? Like there's plenty of games that kind of have a slow burn build to go crazy later on. But it feels more intentional than just, burying the cool stuff.
There needs to be, local maxima versus global maximum, kind of thing. Like, if you're building tension, there needs to be like little builds and releases on the way toward like the grander one. Just from a pacing point of view, and I don't feel that it necessarily hits that as well as I would like it to.
Yeah, yeah. I think your playthrough is a good like edge case of like what they should have kind of worked to avoid people doing as far as All right. Well, yeah, we'll see how it goes. But all right, that's all I got.
Yeah, Spider-Man 2 and Alan Wake 2. Since we're on me, most of my gameplaying time has been spent playing Grand Theft Auto 5 for Watch Out for Fireballs. Ooh. So, a big game to do. But doing that.
Are you heisting at all?
Oh man, I'm like right at the end of the game, so I've got like the big last heist to do. And then gonna go and do some optional stuff. Just to
and
refresh
3,000 hours of multiplayer.
Yep, going and doing every piece of content of Grand Theft Auto Online before Thursday when we record. So the only other thing that I've been playing that I played besides Alan Wake 2 was once I concluded that my PC could not continue Alan Wake 2, I took a cue from David. From last week and streamed World of Horror, which just reached its 1.0 release. Remember last week, and I have streamed this from before. This is the like black and white pixel art roguelike where you're playing through mysteries, basically like little issues of a comic kind of deal, where you have a certain number of days to like get to the bottom of this mystery that's happening in this small town, where supernatural Junji Ito kind of stuff is happening. I had played a few hours of this before, roughly from like the demo and then also in its early access release. And turns out that doing just another 2 hours is not enough to get to the cool new stuff that they added in the 1.0. I think I played one new mystery that I hadn't seen before. But man, this game rules. Yeah.
I do have a question on this, because I know there's some light RPG elements on it. Like, how often are there, like, checks on those attributes?
Very frequently. So this is a game that's kind of built around, like, events, like I am led to believe happens in, like, an Arkham Horror or something like that, where, like, as you, you know, you have these different areas that you can go and explore in order to solve these mysteries. And it says, like, hey, explore around here until you find a clue. And that just involves, like, okay, using an action, using a turn to roll the dice and see what comes up in the downtown area. And then that will pull out like a cool little illustration and a little scenario that you found for yourself. So like, one of them that happens in one of the mysteries that I was on, you're exploring down by the docks, and then this big like lump of flesh with a bunch of arms and limbs like comes out of the water. And it turns out the class of 1971 was taking a photo down by the pier and they fell in, and this is them. And then you get into a combat encounter with class of 71, who has, you know, through the properties of this Eldritch Sea, merged into one flesh being.
you but know? What's their senior year quote?
Homecoming Rat King.
Yeah. There we go. You got it. Oh, nailed
damn.
It.
Damn.
Yeah.
Wow. That's excellent.
So that's like combat, and you've got stamina as your health, and you have reason both as mana that you cast from, but it's also like a sanity. So traumatic things that you see can, or weird things that you see can draw from that. And that's combat, and you like have like AP. It's like an AP system where you dial in actions, filling up an AP bar. In order to do damage, and then you trade blows until the combat is resolved. And then some of the events are just like you make a choice, and then there's a raw check on against some of your attributes, either a raw check or there is like a modified kind of like die roll that happens to see how it resolves. I hesitate to really call this a roguelike because each of these mysteries is meant to be played multiple times. And knowledge of just because there are multiple endings for each of them you go, and like when you start a campaign it pulls five different mysteries for you to approach from random, and like different choices that you make or doing them in different orders if you end up getting two that happen to be related, or something you find in one will be helpful in the other, that can change the outcome of certain stuff. So it's like it is less okay, these things are randomized and everything is up to whatever stats you have and whatever decisions you make, and it's more like I know roughly like what I'm going to need, what I, having played this a couple times before, you know, this particular mystery, I know roughly what I need to be prepared for so I can spend my resources better. So like it does end up becoming a little bit of a memorization test if you want to look at it this way, which makes it less, you know, makes it have less in common with roguelikes generally, which are meant to be like a slot machine kind of thing almost.
Is there any like interaction among the five mysteries that get chosen, or is it like if you know how to do each five of them individually, you kind of know how to play the random game?
So the five were pulled from like a bigger pool, and sometimes something that you find in one can end up being used in the other.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
Yep. But yeah, no, I bring this up, you know, like nothing I described is wildly different from versions of it that have been discussed before or even since the last week. I just bring it up to say, hey, this is cool. And this is like almost exactly the level of roguelike and randomization that I want in one of these things. I still feel like I'm making progress even when I'm failing, which is exactly what I need.
Yay.
That's all for me, unless there are any questions.
Did you beat the class of 71?
I did beat the class of 71. Hell sent yeah. Their ass packing. Asses. Dennis.
It was an ass made of faces. Very disturbing.
Eerie. Dennis, how about you?
I, on the new front, have been playing a game that entered open beta just this week called The Finals. And this is by, the most generic game name in the world, but it's made by the people who were behind some of the original Battlefield games. So like Bad Company and stuff like that. And it's got the trademark environmental destruction.
Do not say Battlefield Bad Company is an early Battlefield game. I realize it came out like 13 years ago, but like, I don't know. I think early Battlefield, I think when they were still in World War II.
That's very fair. Some early Frostbite engine games.
There we go.
Yeah. Okay. And that's probably the best way to say it is there's a lot of Frostbite engine DNA in this game.
Yeah.
But it's compacted down from a gigantic, large team battle game into an arena shooter.
Mm-hmm.
There's, three teams of three people, and you're duking it out in these very vertical arenas. And it's kind of, it's posited as a game show. So the characters are referred to as avatars, and they're all competing for fame, and there's smarmy announcers.
Doing like a Running Man kind of thing.
Mm-hmm, people burst into like showers of coins when they die. So it's got a very arcadey feel to it, with at the same time, very realistic environment destruction, and intense gunplay. So that's a little interesting juxtaposition there.
Can you elaborate on the environment destruction?
Yeah. I mean, basically if you've played Battlefield Bad Company or on, you kind of know what the deal is, where shoot a wall with a rocket launcher and that wall is destroyed and falls apart in like a realistic crumbly way. Mm-hmm. Throw a explosive can onto a balcony and shoot it. It blows stuff off the balcony and a hole in the floor that you can then use to get to new places. And the game is really built around traversing the environment in creative ways and making new routes for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And the classes, there's three classes and they're just called light, medium, heavy, all have abilities that reflect this kind of bent towards, environmental destruction. So the heavy class, their basic like special ability, what's it called? It's like charge and ram or something like that, where basically they just turn themselves into a battering ram and charge forward through walls. For a little bit. The light class has remote detonation charges that are great for setting traps, but can also, blow out floors and walls and stuff like that. And it's really interesting. The game mode is this weird blend of Capture the Flag and King of the Hill. So when all the teams spawn into the map, a vault is dropped somewhere on the map, and you want to grab the vault and take it to a cash out station, which there are several put around the map. Once it's in the cash out station, you have to defend it for a certain period of time. And after that period of time, whoever controls it gets the money. And it doesn't matter if you controlled it for half a second before the timer ran up. Whoever controls it at the end of, whatever it is, 2 minutes ish, is the one that gets the money.
That's interesting. So like the possibility of ninjaing is built right in.
Very much so.
Yeah.
And it's built into the way respawns work as well. I'm not sure what I think of this yet, but if you die, you can respawn in 15 seconds or a teammate can revive you. But if all three teammates die at once, the entire team's respawn counter sets back to 15 seconds. So even if you were 1 second away from getting to respawn, but your team got wiped, now you have to wait another 15 seconds to come back in.
Interesting.
So that incentivizes.
You can create some breathing space for yourself. It rewards you being thoughtful about moving as a team. Cause if you all go in together and fail, you're waiting 15 seconds to come back. But that's not too much different. Whereas if you kind of trickle in one by one and just get picked off, you can get in a situation where not only is that less effective, but then, one person gets picked off too fast before the next person can respawn. And now you're just sitting around.
You have a 30 second respawn. Yeah,
exactly. Each cash out box is worth $10,000, but it functionally is one point you know, and then the first team to $20,000 or 2 points is the one that wins. And it's really interesting that it's instead of just a one team versus another, it's a three-way fight, because you get into these situations where your team is controlling the cash out box and has been eliminated. And you're watching, you know, the fighting going on, and the other two teams keep on taking each other out and fighting each other. No one can get control of the box. And so you get it anyway. It's very, very chaotic in that way. But yeah, the concept is really cool. It's a twist on the format of arena shooters that I haven't seen before. And apparently it's fairly popular. This is just a, an open beta, and they're framing it as a play test. So I don't know if they're going to pull this down in a little bit, but it had 250,000 concurrent players.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Over this past week. So, impressive numbers, and I've had a good time with it. I'm going to chalk it up to it being a play test, that there have been problems with connectivity, and you'll start a match down a man, which is just frustrating, because you feel like you're, you know, now I either bail out of this, and you like don't get credit for the match. You're not exactly punished, but you don't earn any rewards either.
Not a good experience. Yeah.
Or you stick it out and just feel underpowered the entire time.
No.
There's some balancing that needs to happen. The light class seems to be very in the meta right now. And you see a ton of people with just the light class and their silenced pistol that just zip around, and you know, it's the mobility overall.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's hard to figure out how to balance around that in a game that is so vertical and that moves so quickly, that the fastest, most vertically able character is going to do the best.
Yeah.
I don't know how they're going to address that.
Build in some kind of hard counter. Yeah.
Right.
What does the medium character, are they just vanilla? They just don't do anything, or?
They kind of function as a medic as well.
Yeah.
So they have a healing beam as their special thing that you can, you know, you can heal a teammate while they're fighting. And then they have defibrillators that can immediately res a teammate instead of having to stand over them for a couple seconds.
Okay.
And that's the only class that has any kind of healing ability.
Interesting. That's like gameplay mechanics from like the Battlefield games, like the medic class.
Oh yeah, Team Fortress and all that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's got the healing beam in particular has a very Team Fortress vibe. And then the heavy is exactly what it sounds like. Big gun, moves slow. It's kind of built around the idea that once you've taken a cash out box, the heavy is really good at holding it.
Yeah.
But holy cow, if you die, you're going to spend a lot of time getting back into position.
Which is the class with the cube?
The cube?
No, I'm looking at the gameplay video, and there's a guy throwing a cube around.
That's the vault. So you take the vault to the cash out box. Yeah.
Okay. So I wasn't putting the two and two together. Okay.
No. Yeah. That's the MacGuffin of the game.
Yeah. All right. I just the cube is featured prominently. I didn't know if that was if there was some kind of cube-a-mancer.
No, it does. And there is, it's interesting because like once a team gets up, you know, once they score a point, it almost becomes keep away for them. That assumes a level of team coordination that doesn't really happen in quick play matches. But I have seen teams actually do this where it's like, all right, you know, we scored the first point. We don't need to take this to a cash out box. We just need to run away with it.
Yeah.
What's the time limit of the round?
I think it's 15 minutes. Okay. And they distinctly call out a halftime at 8 minutes. And then as you get towards the end, they have like a special effect that will come into play. I've seen low gravity and then mega damage where environments become like super destructible.
That's cool.
Yeah. And again, very game showy.
Yeah.
And they're leaning into that, but it is interesting that, you know, all of a sudden, the one match where I got low gravity was hyper relevant because we were defending a cash out box at the top of a skyscraper. And it's like, oh, now suddenly people can come from anywhere because it's low gravity and they can just jump. Whereas before we kind of had a real strategic advantage. Now we're a lot more vulnerable. So that made the end of the game very chaotic and intense and fun.
That's an interesting way to increase like volatility as the game goes on too, with like random effects.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they, you know, they call it out just before it happens. So your team does have a second to be like, okay, this is coming. What do we do about it?
Mm-hmm.
That said, I haven't found a single other person that uses a mic yet, which maybe I've just got something wrong in the settings. But this game has a lot of potential to my mind. And I think if I had any criticism, I think three-person teams feels just a little bit too small. I think maybe just one or two more people would completely change the dynamic in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
Three people, it just feels a little too easy to wipe. And I don't know, maybe I'm trained that, if this is a big environmental destruction game, I need to have 24 people on a team or something. Yeah, so it feels weird.
It could be a sacrifice of having like the decision to make three teams. So you just have to keep the numbers lower, but
and the hyper destructible environments, right?
Yeah,
you only want so many people throwing rockets around at once, to keep things under control. So that's the finals, and it's currently in open beta. I don't know how long they'll keep it up, but check it out if you like arena shooters.
They should really have thought of a better name for Google purposes, because if you do a search for the finals game, it's going to bring up the NBA. Yeah.
Or you know, whatever sport you happen to be in the playoffs of. Just ridiculous.
Yeah.
So that's a big new game I've been playing. Any other questions on that or thoughts on that?
No.
Cool. I have been playing lots more Forza Motorsport. I got my second ever first place finish earlier today. So that felt like a huge accomplishment. I bet on the weather and put on wet tires to start a race where it was just kind of drizzling.
Okay.
But I felt like the rain was picking up a little bit on that last qualifying lap. I had a feeling, and that paid off. That made all the difference.
Mm-hmm.
And that felt real good. Still way too many rammers and people who just drive like maniacs. I don't know, you know, what needs to change in the penalty system to adjust that, but you can still just lose a really promising race because some asshat behind you forgot where the brake pedal was.
I mean,
you're just sounding like an adult driving now. It's like, I put on my rain tires, all these punk kids driving around.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, that's probably what it is. And you can definitely tell when someone's racing on a controller just by the way the car moves. And it's like,
overcorrecting asshole and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's, and based on what you described last time too, like just that opening scrum, you know, just like, okay, if you make it out of this alive, you're probably set. And then everybody just crashing into each other after the green flag. Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't figured out how to not have contact, but I've figured out how to kind of mitigate it. Like you always take the furthest inside line, get there early so that you're not trying to cross the road as everyone's coming into this turn. And then just hang on to your butt and see where it goes. I have played, I played more Fortnite with the kiddos. Which continues to be very fun. Although I gotta say, playing trios with two essentially potatoes on the team.
Yeah, you're not necessarily racking up the W's.
No. Once we got out of the stage where they're matching us exclusively against bots. Now we've had a good number of like, you know, second, third place finishes. Like it's that's a lot of fun. But there just comes a point where it's like, okay, I can't fight everyone myself.
My back is breaking.
Yeah, exactly. But the worst part is because I'm, you know, I know what I'm doing a little bit more. I'm a bit more of an active player. That means I kind of engage more often, which then results in me getting killed first because my backup isn't there. Oh. And then I get, Dad, you're so bad.
Oh.
You always die first, Dad. All right, I'll let you take points, smart guy.
Yeah.
See how you do.
It's like a moral decision. What kind of parent do you want to be?
Oh, it's tough too. Like, you know, the we've gotten down to like a final circle or whatever, and you know, Milo's the only one left, and he's got the guy lined up in his sights and just doesn't want to pull the trigger because he can't decide what weapon he wants to use to shoot them. He's like, it doesn't matter, any of them. It's just, he's like, okay, now he's looking at you and you're dead. Okay. Okay. No, that's good. Good job. You got second is good. It's been really fun. Still. But yeah, not a ton new to say there. I guess there's a new season about to come out, or a new battle pass, or
there's always
something.
A new season. Yeah.
Right. So we're actually at a crossing over point.
How many first places do you have in Fortnite?
I mean, there were like six in a row when we started, cause it was all against bots.
Okay.
And then maybe like, 1 in 10 after that. 1 in 15.
Cause I imagine like the room has to go nuts when you guys do that.
Oh yeah. It gets, well, the, the other adorable thing is that Luke literally shouts bang, bang, bang when he shoots people. so that's adorable and fun. And yeah, as there are some hype moments, as the kids say. yeah, so that's Fortnite. The final thing I just wanted to touch on is I dipped into Diablo 4's new-ish season, the Season of Blood. And where I think a lot of people complained about the first season event of Diablo. Mm-hmm. Just that, you know, there were some interesting wrinkles, but then once you got through them, there still wasn't anything to do in the end game. It's seeming like seeming like Season of Blood is fixing that really well. And there's all sorts of new end game bosses. They have like specific elemental themes, so you really need to plan your build around that. And in general, I've just knocked that out of the park. I'm still early enough in the grind that I'm kind of just taking whatever equipment is newest.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in that stage. So I haven't seen kind of the best of what the season has to offer, but
it's
I'm
not
still
so much like
fun.
A conscious build making thing. Yeah.
Not yet. I kind of have an eye to where I want to go, but it's just like, I'm going to find better stuff than I've got right now. So just pick the greenest number and continue.
Yeah.
But even within that, it is kind of fun because you unlock vampiric powers, and you can equip up to 5 of them, that you just have active, but, those powers all have a sigil cost. There's 3 different kinds of sigils, and your equipment that you find will have randomly rolled sigils.
They just can't resist the urge to put different currencies in. It's now currencies for casting spells.
Basically, yeah. And so, you know, as you're using a new piece of equipment, you got to balance kind of like, all right, this is more powerful, but it also doesn't have the sigils I need. So what vampiric powers am I going to keep? What ones am I going to let, you know, follow the wayside, at least for a little bit. But the powers do inject some really fun stuff. It's as simple as, like, you know, health leeching when you deal damage. It's as crazy as you turn into a swarm of bats when you dodge. So there's lots of fun stuff going on there that I am interacting with right now. And that's carrying me through, hopefully, towards the end game. Yeah, not much more to say about that, as I'm still getting into it.
Cool.
But that is what I've been up to.
It's good that they're slowly trying to correct it, although I'm sure there are complaints.
Oh, it's the internet. You can find anyone complaining about anything.
Hmm. Nice. Cool. Well, that sounds like the games we've been playing.
Yes, it does.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer. Dennis, what is what'd you ask the nice people?
Yeah, this being Halloween when we record, I had to do a Halloween themed one. So pitch us an M-rated horror spinoff of a non-horror franchise. What series deserves a healthy dose of blood and guts?
Yeah. And Sean kicks us off with Detective Pikachu Halloween Special. Pokemon have been slaughtered in hideous ways, and Pikachu has to solve which Pokemon is the killer before it is too late.
That Snorlax isn't asleep, he's dead.
Oh, that's a good one. Kind of similar to one of mine, unless I come up with a different one. It may be, Ben, what does Callum say?
Callum says, not a whole game, but I'm a bit sad the Final Fantasy VII remake didn't give us a full horror section. Following the blood trail in Shinra Tower could have been made into a full horror scene, and that would have been awesome.
That was a spooky sequence from the original. Mm-hmm. It's sad to hear it's not present in this one. Yeah. That's kind of when the game got real, you know. It's like, oh, so here's the threat. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jala, what does David say?
David says, ever since I started playing Baldur's Gate 3 and the way they nailed the D&D experience, I would love DLC that takes you into the campaign books. Imagine the first time you take a long rest and the mists of Barovia envelop you, and the only way to escape is to defeat the vampire Strahd von Zarovic.
Yeah, a Ravenloft game in the Baldur's Gate 3 engine, you know, kind of experience would be amazing. I'm not so much of a fan of Strahd, but give me something set in the carnival from the from Ravenloft. Mm, that'd be good eating. That's what that would be. Yeah.
And they already do some events that happen like in your camp.
Yeah.
No space is safe.
there's spooky stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dennis, what's Ollie say?
Ollie says, my favorite games on the last generation of consoles were the Hitman trilogy. Wonderful, emergent gameplay everywhere you looked. There was only one problem. You were Agent 47, and even when you effed it up, it was entirely possible to get out of trouble just by effing up anything that moves. So I proposed a crossover between Hitman and The Last of Us. Same style of gameplay, but if you make a mistake, it's clickers, bloaters, rat kings, and Ellie coming for you. She is not a dog protagonist, the most terrifying creature in existence. How many people have you killed today, Nathan Drake? No, that's just me. Bonus for real life horror, you are forced to play Just Dance for 15 hours, but the only song is Don't Worry, Be Happy by Bobby McFerrin. Terrifying.
Yeah, that's unethical is what that would be. Yeah. Dave C says Super Mario World 2, Yoshi's Dead Island.
That's pretty good.
Gosh, throwing the eggs at zombie shy guys. Yeah. Ben, what does Eli say?
Eli says, I'm a visual novel nerd, and one of my favorites is the Muvlove trilogy. The name sounds anime as shit, and it can be. The first game is a lighthearted romantic comedy game that's about 30 hours, a huge buy-in. But the following two games leverage the time you spent with those characters to introduce an invading alien force. And all those characters you spent 30 hours getting to know are now having to fight for their lives in a horrific war for the survival of humanity. And if they fail, horrific things happen to them. It ends up being one of the most brutal and horrific games I've played and spent 150 hours getting through. All that is to say, I think the same approach would be something like Persona 5 would be perfection. We spent over 100 hours with these characters, just kind of getting to know them. They resolve the Persona 5 plot, and then the camera pans to show ships landing on Earth, and it becomes a horror survival game through Japan.
Hmm.
That'd be sweet.
Yeah.
And do DLC that way.
I think that's part of what made Mass Effect 2 so good as well. That's similar. Yeah. Sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Jala, what does Peter say?
Peter says, let's take the setting of Rogue Galaxy, so a variety of planets throughout one specific solar system. Give it the classic Resident Evil, Shadow Hearts, Castlevania, nitty and gritty, post-apocalyptic atmosphere and tone. However, because there is still hope, there is a partial adaptation where one of the planets has the Star Ocean logic, where the crew tries to engage in the more prehistoric setting, but spoilers, it's got an Invernax sequence, and the enemies are brutal, and all your decisions haunt you. The ultimate twist, though, is, as your party gets damaged during battle, the character models get visibly more and more mangled. For example, when a character gets hit with a strong attack, if you block it, you reduce damage, but at the cost of a broken arm or shoulder. Also, if you get a game over, you have a sequence like from the end of Berserk, only there is no one that comes to save you like Guts. Should you manage to make it to the end of the game, you battle an amalgamation of outer gods that is drawn in horrific detail by Junji Ito and story writing by R.L. Stine. Too much. Yeah, probably. But sometimes that's the point.
Yeah. I don't know anything about those games, so it sounds cool. It is hard to comment further on it. Yeah, but yeah, yeah. No, it's, we're just making. We're asking for made up things. We can make up cool things to ask for.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Dennis, what does David say?
David says Pokemon has immense horror potential. You could probably make a horror game based around each ghost type and their Pokédex entries.
That was going to be one of my answers for this. I've come up with a better one. And Kyle responds on the same lines as Pokemon, Kirby, which show the world inside of Kirby.
Oh, no.
show where they go.
Yeah. I thought they crossed a line with whatever mouth mode.
Mouthful mode.
Mouthful mode.
Mouthful mode, yes.
Oh, gosh.
Can Kirby's mouth ever truly be full?
No. It's the horror of the never-ending hunger that gets at you. And the just the all-consuming, some would say innocence, but I would say ignorance at the heart of him. Curtis says, Katamari Damacy, a bunch of household items trying to escape the round devourer. That is a good one.
Also another name for Kirby.
Yep.
Ben, what does Ruki say?
Ruki says, Metroid is already 95% of the way towards being alien. Just needs a few tweaks to get there. Just limit your ammo and health pickups, make movement more deliberate, and turn the brightness down, swap out the music, and you're done. Mega Man Body Horror Edition is a bit of a straight putt too.
He does incorporate the abilities of enemies. I mean, Ruki, you're basically just pitching kind of Metroid Fusion.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They fainted in that direction. More so in Fusion than in Dread.
They went as far in that direction as Nintendo is likely to go.
Yes. Yeah. Let's see, Jala, what does Case say?
Case says, my answer is Stardew Valley. All it needs is some zombies and body horror, and wait a minute, that's just Graveyard Keeper.
I need to check back in on Graveyard Keeper. I liked that game, stability and like bug issues aside. Yeah, there's been more to it too. And finally here, Dennis, what does Maniov say?
Miniav says, Animal Crossing as a cult village seems like a shout, but isn't that Cult of the Lamb?
It is.
Otherwise, I'd say maybe Kirby could have a more graphic zombie spin. Maybe he doesn't swallow everything whole. Maybe he has teeth. Maybe he doesn't need friends, only food.
You get back from being trapped on a desert island for a year. Hey, Dennis, was Kirgy there? Was the Grink there? Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Yes.
Kirgy.
Our legally distinct horror spinoff.
Oh, man. So for my answer, I'm going to say the Incredible Machine, but it's Jigsaw mode. You are making Rube Goldberg good machines, but in order to deliver ironic punishments.
It's like the Incredible Machine for pigs.
Let's see here. Ben, how about you?
Yeah, I was thinking like kind of setting first. So the one that I came up with was like Firewatch, which they kind of dabble in horror, but if that was like purely a horror game, I think the setting and like the characters would be fantastic for it.
The Isolation,
then
I mean, in that case it would be Outlast 2. Jala, how about you?
Chocobo's Mysterious Hell Dungeon.
Yeah, man. Crossover between horror and Final Fantasy would be very good. Amnesia, but the enemy pursuing you is a Tonberry. And Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I want to see like I guess it might already be Prison Architect, depending on how you look at it, but one of those like sim management games where you are just, you know, moving human cattle around to do your evil overlord's bidding.
Oh yeah.
And I feel like there was a hell simulator game, but it was very like snarky cheeky, didn't really hit the mark there.
I talked about it. It was really underwhelming. It's called Hell Architect, but I didn't necessarily care for. I mean, Prison Architect itself is a horror game. But like you're almost describing more of like a Dungeon Keeper, or it's like spiritual successor Dungeons as well.
Yeah. Maybe I'm Rune thinking
World
of a different
as
game.
Well.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah.
You can do horrific things to humans in that game.
Oh yeah.
Wait, humans or dwarves?
Are you thinking of Dwarf Fortress?
Oh yeah, I always get those two confused.
Yeah, they're similar. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, something that really leans into that, and maybe introduces it gradually to just, you know, see how much people will frog in the boiling pot of water.
Oh yeah,
the atrocities.
Yeah, Spec Ops, the line it.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that was a fun one. Thank you so much, everybody, for writing in. Thank you, Dennis, for posting it. If you would like to participate, you can go to the Duckfeed community group on Facebook and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games and how we feel about them. Jala, let's hit your story first, because this is interesting to me. What's happening in the world of movie to game crossovers?
Yeah, so the 2022 hit horror film Barbarian is getting a video game adaptation via Diversion 3 in association with New Regency Pictures. Diversion 3 was behind the game adaptations of Friday the 13th and Evil Dead, and says that the game will be based on characters and creatures from the movie. So the story of Barbarian, if you don't know, follows a young
Barbarian is good enough to go in fresh. I don't know how deep you want to go into that synopsis. I apologize for stopping you.
Oh, just a quick little setup.
Sorry.
Barbarian follows a young woman who books a rental home in a bad part of town, only to find a man already staying there, convinced that the nearby hotels are all booked up due to a local conference, and because it's late at night, she decides to share the rental with the stranger, and hijinks and death ensue.
There we go. Okay. So I apologize for being trigger shy on that one.
Fine.
Yeah. That makes sense that studio would be taking a crack at this.
I'm very interested to see how it turns out, because it seems like, so much of Barbarian the movie is like in the metaphor of the movie, like even the fact like she's in a bad neighborhood, she doesn't realize, and that kind of plays into the theming of the movie of like what you see and not realizing what's underneath and that sort of thing. I don't know how any of that can be translated to a video game. So it sounds like if it's like Friday the 13th, it's like, it's just going to be the skin and none of the meaning behind it.
It might be.
It's kind of jumping right to the final layer of the story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm very intrigued by this though.
I'm curious about it. At the very least, this is not what I would have expected.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Nice. Ben, what's going on with old David Hayter recently?
Yeah, this one came out this morning, and I think I woke up to this, so this was interesting. But Konami released a video, and it's kind of vaguely advertising about the future of Metal Gear. But the surprise of it was that David Hayter is featured in it and is doing the narration of the spot. It's only a 30-second ad, and they haven't really announced details of to what degree, what capacity David Hayter is going to be involved with the future of Metal Gear, but a bunch of people are speculating on it. A bunch of people are happy that he is back associated with Konami again, because just the backstory, in case the listener's not aware, is he got let go from the series and replaced with Kiefer Sutherland, which was a kind of baffling move, but it was like, I guess Konami felt that Kiefer Sutherland was more like Jack Bauer was closer to what they wanted for Snake than what their original
20 years ago he was.
But I think fans were pretty against that, and so I think people are probably excited about this, but it still is also a huge question mark, because it's like, still don't know what the remasters of Metal Gear are going to be like. The last time we talked about this said that there was just going to be like re-releasing the game and maybe like redubbing it but not changing any of the gameplay sort of thing. So it's like, so it's in a very weird spot.
Yeah.
I hate to imagine a world where they are self-aware enough to know that showing David Hayter coming back into the series will get people so excited, but not self-aware enough to actually bring him back into the series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that would imply there is more series for him to be in.
Fair, yes.
Yeah. The thing about this is it's Konami, so there's no guarantee that this is going to be anything other than an NFT series that they're bringing out or some shit. Mm. Yeah.
True.
So, I'll believe basically anything only once it is on a disc and playable.
Yeah.
Mm.
Guys, I'm so happy. I was going to make a joke by saying, "Oh, it's a new NFT. They're caught up on that finally."
Oh.
And I could not remember the acronym for NFT.
Oh man, it is faded.
That's a good thing.
Yeah. Oh,
that's good news.
The water's been cleansed.
Nature is healing.
Yeah, Dennis, what's Cliff Bleszinski doing? this guy has kind of beclowned himself on.
This is still very much that.
Okay,
There's a great thought in the story that I want to start with, and then we're going to Cliff Bleszinski it. Bleszinski, whatever. So Gears of War is a beloved and very sequelized series. And its creator, Cliff, said that he thinks it should get kind of the God of War treatment. That maybe, hey, let's reset this deal and kind of go back. And now that we're through the it's cool to be macho phase of video games, maybe, you know, take some of the more interesting themes in the game and actually give them a proper treatment.
They want to datify Gears of War.
Yeah, I don't. There were plenty of daddy issues in Gears of War, weren't there? I feel like that was
I can't recall. Thing. Yeah,
but yeah, maybe just handle it not with the complete ham-fistedness that series has.
Yeah,
I think there is a ton in there on, Lord of the Rings style male friendship that we could explore.
Mm-hmm.
Go that route with it. Hell yeah. Kind of playing into that, the interviewer, I'm just going to read the end of this article. When the interviewer mentioned to Bleszinski that he was 10 years old when he played Gears of War 3 and Dom's death was the first scene in a video game to ever make him cry, the Gears creator was touched and responded, "That means a fucking lot to me, even though I'm wearing a shirt that says I eat ass in Japanese."
I'm not surprised that that's the person who made that game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fucking parody of himself.
It's, there is a kind of vibe that can pull that off. Probably, at the tail end of, I want more people to take the story that I thought of seriously. And in that interview, maybe alive that detail. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm not going to say I'm above the T-shirt that says that. You know,
it implies an amount of pride and like wanting to get it out there that he's in that T-shirt.
It kind of seems like he's marketing that shirt.
Yeah, we do have an affiliate link. So if you check the show notes, I like the idea of rebooting Gears of War and giving it the Dad of War treatment, not necessarily directly in fatherhood themes, but just like, hey, a real pathos and new directions given to characters that, a lot of young gamers, took seriously.
Take it and D2000sify it.
Yeah. make it as cool and deep as we thought it was when we first played it.
Mm-hmm.
Who am I kidding? No one ever thought the Gears of War was cool and deep.
No, I knew people who really took it seriously, who were really waiting to see what happened in Gears 3.
Yeah. It's just I was reading the article being like, oh, this could be cool. And then got to the end. I'm like, of course.
Yeah. Oh, well, I've got other. So I have two AI stories. They're both very brief, but I want to talk about a bad use of AI before I talk about an interesting one.
Sure.
Or at least an entertaining one in principle. So the bad story is that Ubisoft, which is having a lot of trouble, they're doing a lot of layoffs. I may the amount of trouble they're in may be overstated, to which I mean it's not that they're not profitable, it's just that they're not profitable enough. So layoffs.
Yeah, they're just, they are just in like trouble everything. With their investors.
Yes. Yeah. So tons of layoffs, in addition to a lot of harassment and lawsuit stuff happening at very high levels in the company, at particular sub studios, because Ubisoft, you know, spans the world. But it's a bad look after all of these layoffs, you know, particularly among creative teams, for them to suddenly on their social media start sharing AI generated images of Assassin's Creed characters to promote the series as a whole. Yeah, you don't shut down whole entire studios and then flaunt like, hey, we're using AI to promote our stuff now. You know, just think how many salaries were eliminated from our balance sheet because of that. It's bad behavior. They shouldn't have done it. They shouldn't do it. It's it doesn't make you a Luddite to say that.
Yeah, it's tone deaf in a best case scenario and just only goes worse from there.
Mm-hmm. And this is happening all across a bunch of stuff, more so in television. Like Disney has been using AI stuff like in title sequences and in promo images for like their for Marvel shows. It's bad. I don't like it. I think people take the AI discussion and turn it towards like, oh, we need to make sure that it doesn't turn sentient and Skynet us or whatever, to distract from the fact that it's mostly a labor disaster, you know. So understand, eyes are on target there. But what AI can and should be used for is very experimental. Very experimental art and surrealistic storytelling. So I wanted to follow up with a check-in on the Twitch Seinfeld, Twitch's AI Seinfeld, Nothing Forever, which last time we talked about it, I believe it got banned from Twitch because they made a joke. Our joke was generated that was construed to be transphobic. Which, you know, good, probably worth retooling after that. And it's come back, but over the past few weeks, it has gotten even more surreal as the wheels have fallen off and people started pointing out that instead of the little PS1 style Seinfeld characters, you know, doing riffs and doing anything resembling the show, they will just stand and stare at each other for hours, occasionally gesticulating wildly or talking about like impermanence or like broad concepts for a little while. They'll like walk into the fridge over and over again. stuff like that, as it just gets
walking back and forth from the fridge over and over again is surprisingly human.
Not walking back and forth, just walking into the fridge and running into it like a video game character.
Ah, yes, not quite as human.
Yeah, yeah. The creators have gone offline. This is one of those things where, like, if this is the way that the AI kind of painted itself into a corner naturally, like after it had done all these permutations and learned from itself and it became this surrealistic experimental kind of thing, that is really cool. What is less impressive is if they're like doing a Horsey Books thing and this is intentionally they're giving it prompts to do this. That is less impressive, but this I think is what I want AI to be used for, is jokes and shitpost stuff. That's that is good. Yeah,
agreed.
Only barely related to video games, but I felt like talking about it because it's cool. Well, how does everybody feel about buttoning it up?
Buttons.
The credit.
Thank you so much for tuning in to level number 478. If you would like to help out the show, you know what you can do. You can write in on the multiplayer, the Duckbeat community group on Facebook, leave a rating and review in whatever podcast directory you happen to enjoy using. You can tell your friends, come back and subscribe and all of that good stuff. Jala, what's happening Jala's place?
Yeah, so the last topical episode was on internet and identity, and the last media episode, which just dropped this last week, was on Simulacra, the entirety of the Simulacra series. We talk about all of it. Very fun stuff.
Nice. Yeah. And you've talked about Simulacra over the course of several years, but even here recently, as you were playing up on it too. So if you're curious about those, that'll be a deeper dive conversation, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And the two episodes do tie together because Simulacra has a lot of stuff that delves into the internet and how that relates to our lives and well-being. So, yeah.
Cool. Nice. And you can find that at jalachan.place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Dennis, you got anything?
No, nothing crazy.
Okay. And Ben, how about you?
Nothing sane.
Okay. Well, I've been Cole Ross. You can follow me on Blue Sky at Cole Ross.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can follow me on Blue Sky at Furia Games.
I'm Jalachan everywhere.
And I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles.
A title, right?
I have one title.
I have three. Jala, what's yours?
Kurgi and the Grink.
Okay. I like your spelling of Kurgi. Yours is K-I-R-G-H-E-E, ending in the butter-like substance, the clarified butter. Mine is was Kurgi there? I have it spelled K-U-R-G-Y.
Like Kurgi and the Grink because it sounds like Pinky and the Brain or something.
Yes.
Bad news, the Grink has already been trademarked. Is what's the word? Viciously defended.
Oh, yes. I also have Cube Mancer. Somebody's the cops are coming for us. sorry, that was very fun timing.
They acknowledged it.
Yeah. And then I have the Homecoming Rat King.
sorry. That's mine, and the police seem to like it, so.
Okay. Yes. Let's see, Ben, what you got?
I also had Cube Mancer, and I also had Homecoming Rat King.
Okay, who wants to make an impassioned case? Because I can go any number of ways on this.
I vote for the spookiest one.
Spookiest one.
Kurgi is very unsettling, so that could be Halloween-themed.
Yeah.
If it's a Kurgi one, it does have to be Jala's spelling.
It does have to be Jala's spelling and Jala's formulations. Kurgi and the Grink feels good. Yes. Sure. Jala, how do you feel?
It has a nice cadence.
It does. It is decided.